So this week on the Rethink Tax podcast episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Timmy Merriman-Johnson, who's the voice and creator behind Mr. Money Jar. Mr. Money Jar is an award-winning education financial platform providing practical financial advice and guidance. He's been featured on the BBC, on Lab Bible, and on Sky News. And I'm really glad you've been able to join me today, Timmy. Thank you so much. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Carla. Thanks for that very kind introduction.
Well, I think I read a review somewhere that you were sort of given your award on the basis that you give original, fresh, fun advice, and you make practical, you know, guidance for people around really technical topics and make them accessible. And that's what Rethink Tax is all about. So you're just the person to have on the show. So thanks again.
Awesome stuff.
So before we get into it, just a quick reminder to those listening that this season's Rethink Tax podcast is all about tax and me. And Timmy has very kindly joined to talk about tax and relationships. But before we get into that, Timmy, maybe do you want to just share for those listening why you started Mr. Money Jar and give us your own take on what you're trying to do in your own space?
Yeah, sure. I started Mr. Money Jar 2 years ago, just out of a curiosity I had around how money works and like questions I had personally. So I was working in marketing and PR at the time, mm-hmm. and I was still in my student overdraft. I was saving up to buy a house, all of those kind of very normal things. But I had no idea how to manage my money. I wasn't really budgeting at the time. I was kind of spending it on like going out and all those normal things. And at the same time, I was curious as to why some people seem to be very wealthy and why some people weren't, why some people seem to earn a lot of money, some people did not. And so I read loads of books, watched loads of videos and listened to podcasts and just really educated myself. And then I thought, rather than be that friend that's just constantly talking about money, why don't I set up a page and share it there? And then the rest is history.
Brilliant. I love that. So rather than just chewing your friend's ears off, you thought, hang on a second, I've got a message that other people need to hear. It's brilliant. Yeah. Well, the reason you very kindly agreed to join the podcast today, when we're talking about all things relationship oriented, is that because you've just recently got married. So first off, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I guess when we were talking about how we think about tax and relationships, I guess the starting point is, when most people think about weddings, they probably are thinking more around the sort of romantic getting ready for the event, the big day itself, and less around some of the things to do with finance and tax. But I think when we talked before we got on this podcast, you might have had a slightly different attitude to this. And I'd love for you to share that with us.
Yeah, I just think that the wedding, well, when I was younger, I really didn't care about weddings at all. Like, I just thought they were sort of a waste of time and a massive expense. And that's as recently as, you know, 5 years ago. As I've gotten older, obviously my opinion has mellowed out and yeah. I'm slightly more mature now. And I do recognize the social significance of weddings, the importance of two families meeting each other and just people coming together as well, which has come out of 18 months where people's loved ones haven't been able to see each other, and a wedding taking place now might be their first opportunity to do that in a year and a half. That is super, super important. So my opinion has changed on that. Where my opinion hasn't changed is that the wedding is not the marriage. And so you need to see those two things as distinct and treat them as such. And so whilst we made the time to have a wedding at a really small 12-person wedding, I wanted to make sure that we didn't lose sight of the lifelong commitment that we were entering into as well.
Absolutely. I love that. And as part of that lifelong commitment that you were committing to, I know you and your wife sat down and kind of looked and before your wedding, as well as after your wedding, looked at sort of what that meant in terms of your finances.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit more about what that meant in practice for you two?
That we were one, you know, in the eyes of the state, in the eyes of our family and friends, that we were one entity instead of two, Timmy and Jenny Limited, if you will. And that's been a journey in and of itself. You know, when we first met, obviously our finances were completely separate. And then over time, we integrated them more and more. First, it was like eating out. It's like, instead of putting it on two cards, let's just put it on one. And then It was like we moved in together and we started paying for bills and rent together. And then now it's just like completely aligned. So her finances are my finances and my finances are hers. That doesn't mean that we don't have individual finances within that. Like we each get a bit of almost like pocket money out of the main joint account every month. But overall, that was seen as one entity.
I love that. And actually, it ties very nicely with the idea behind the marriage allowance, which is a very specific tax benefit that's made available to married couples and those in civil partnerships as well. And I think, you know, what you just described about how you're seen as one, and within the concept of a marriage allowance, for those that don't know, the basic premise is if one of you has either a reduction in income below the sort of personal allowance threshold, which is about £12,500 at the minute.
£12,570, if I understand correctly.
So if you do have some sort of circumstances that lead you to either drop below that, then you may be entitled to the marriage allowance. And Timmy, I know this is something you've mentioned to me in the past that you were certainly aware of, and you might have even made sort of reference to it as you were sort of going down the track towards marriage. And what would that mean for you if you were able to take advantage of that marriage allowance?
That's a great question. I'm still working out, because I'm now just running my business, I don't work another job. The amount of money that I pay myself every month is a lot less than I was earning in my previous job. So we would be able to take advantage of that at this particular moment in time. In terms of going forwards, I think it would just give us flexibility. Just knowing that should one of us have a reduction in earnings, that we can transfer that allowance. Right now for me, that's because I'm running a business, but there are obviously lots of other life milestones that come up as well. People can be unable to work because they're starting a family, because they've had children, because they fall ill. There are all sorts of reasons. So I think it gives flexibility, and it also gives peace of mind knowing that there's that kind of that policy is in place.
Absolutely. And so maybe just to explain the detail behind it very briefly for those listening, the way the marriage allowance works is it enables one person within that married or civil partnership couple to transfer up to £1,260 of your personal allowance, which at today's date would equate to giving you a sort of benefit of £252 in this tax year from an individual perspective. So as you say, it's sort of really there to enable people to have that flexibility, to give them that little bit of extra freedom within their sort of personal finances that might just mean that life becomes a little easier in the context of all the other financial sort of struggles or concerns or just sort of generally getting through the month and meeting your bills and expenses that you might have to address. So absolutely. So I love that. I love that lesson and that learning from sort of your own experience of like looking at marriage and looking at what it means to kind of come together as a couple and what it can mean for your finances.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying. I don't think marriage is purely a like financial exercise. But it kind of, I don't know, maybe I'll, like Jenny wouldn't be too happy for me to say this, but I do think like marriage is kind of, it's like a legal almost thing.
Yeah.
The wedding is like a social thing for like everyone else, but then it's also distinct from the relationship. I think romance should be the domain of the relationship and the wedding to a certain extent. And then the marriage can be like the serious bit, like all the things that we're talking about today. And I just think what happens very often is it all gets like mixed up together. And and people, you know, see marriage as like a romantic thing,
and maybe don't think about the other sort of more adulting things that come alongside it. I totally agree, and I think this is, you know, what we're talking about here is really breaking a little bit of a barrier when it comes to talking about finances. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a cliche that in the UK we shy away from talking about money, and I think if that is true in a personal context, it's doubly true when it comes to talking about it in a couple's context. I know very few people amongst my own personal friends who, you know, it takes a lot to sit down and go to really open the books and show each other what's going on and make a plan for what it means for, you know, whatever your couple looks like. What does your future involve when it comes to your finances?
Yeah.
And I think you've got another really interesting sort of lesson for people to learn when it comes to your own sort of circumstances. And that was a step you took pretty early on in your journey as a married couple, which was to write a will. So do you want to just maybe share a little bit more about how you came about to do that and what you learned along the way?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure like how many people have done this before, but yeah, I wrote a will like live on the internet. So on the Mr. Money Jar Show, my weekly podcast. And I decided to do that actually partly inspired by the fact that we got on Property Ladder last year. And that was the first like serious Amazing. Conversation we, thank you, first serious conversation we had to have around things like life insurance and critical illness cover and like buying an asset together. And I've just started to think a lot more about, you know, like owning something and passing it on and protecting it. And so when Bequest reached out, shout out to Bequest, do the will writing session, I was really pleased because it was that sort of thing that I would have probably put off for several weeks. And they actually, their platform is really good and made writing the will very easy. There's still a couple steps I need to do. I need to get it registered and stuff, but at least the document is complete now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what you just said there, you know, there are services out there where you can go and write a will and you can get a bit of help or you can get a template. I mean, of course, you can do it yourself and simply write a document that tries to document what you would want to do to pass on what you have. But I think, you know, the fact that you've sat down and thought about it in and of itself is like just so worthwhile because you're right. So few people, I think, I mean, I guess, you know, for lots of reasons, people put off having that conversation or having the internal conversation about what they would want to do with their own personal finances and assets.
Yeah. And there was a bit during it as well where one of the questions was, have you planned your funeral? Which is just not a question I think many 30-somethings or 20-somethings think about. It is serious. I'm not trying to say it's not serious, but like there are just some things in life that are definitely gonna happen, and like thinking about them is like it's proactive and it's sensible, and like it doesn't need to be sad, it doesn't need to be like a negative thing. If you have a will, if you've written a will, that means that you have acquired stuff in your life that you can pass on to people. That means that you've done something right.
Absolutely.
And it's to be celebrated.
Absolutely. I love that. It's all about your legacy and what do you want to leave behind. And yeah, that's so important. And I guess in the context of will writing, it's sort of inevitable that you bump up against the subject of inheritance tax. And I think, you know, it's an area again that I am not sure how much people really know about how inheritance tax works. I think, you know, there are often headlines in the press about some of the thresholds that are available and how those work. But I think actually it's worth maybe just taking a little moment, if you're up for it with me, Timmy, just to kind of step through, well, what are some of those basic rules that are worth people knowing and how might it, you know, work in practice for a couple like yours when you're starting to think about planning for that future? So I guess the first thing is around the threshold. So I won't put you on the spot, but
Can I guess?
You can guess what the threshold is. Yeah, go for it.
Your tax, 40% on assets over 325,000. But that you haven't disposed of at least 7 years before you pass away?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you've got it right on first time. So the threshold at the moment is £325,000. So as you said, anything in the value of your estate, and it's worth just pausing there because the value of your estate is a very specific legal term and not one that I would want to advise on. It's definitely something that you want to get some input from a specialist advisor on. So once you know that, you can look at the threshold and you can say, okay, well, is it worth more or less than the threshold that applies for inheritance tax to kick in? And if it's below the threshold, well, that's great news. You've still got a value of an estate that's like pretty great, and you're not going to pay any tax on it. So that's the first thing to note. I think the second thing to be aware of is you're absolutely right that above the threshold, typically tax kicks in, but there are some exceptions to that rule. And I think the big exception that I would call out that is you know, really kind of in point as we're talking about your own circumstances in a married couple, is the fact that if you leave in your will your estate to your spouse or civil partner, then that again is not subject to tax. So even if the value of your estate is over the £325,000, if you leave all of that to a living spouse or civil partner, you don't pay any tax.
Yep.
That's a massive benefit in favor of married couples.
Yeah.
And it's worth pointing out that if you're cohabiting and unmarried or not in a civil partnership, unfortunately, under our current laws, you do not benefit from the same amazing tax benefit. So it is a big area where married couples sort of win, in inverted commas, over those who are unmarried under our tax laws.
It's only relatively recently in my life, in the last few years, that I learned about that. I thought that, you know, back in the days when I thought, yeah, like, why do you need to get married and stuff? I thought that you could just cohabit and stuff. But actually, the rules are really different. And I was on the UK Money Bloggers Facebook group the other day, and Sarah from Debt Camel was sharing a story about how, you know, in a couple, sometimes the surviving cohabitee might have to sell an asset in order to get the cash and then be taxed on it. It just sounded really messy. Now, whether we agree with whether cohabiting couples should be treated the same as civil partners or married couples is sort of a separate but very important conversation. Mm. But when my friends have been speaking to me about how I feel about being married, my honest answer has been, to be honest, where me and my partner were 2 years ago, we could have gotten married then.
Right.
Like we could have been realizing all of these benefits as soon as possible. And I say to people, if you're with someone and you're serious about them, like, get married. You know, I would say the same thing to someone who wanted to start a business. I was like, if you've got an idea and you you're passionate about it and like you've got like traction and you're making a little bit of money, I would just like register the company, and I would say the same thing. But, and I'm sorry to keep coming back to this.
No.
I think that because marriage gets conflated with weddings and gets conflated with relationships, people go, oh no, I can't get married because how much is the wedding going to cost?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they're confusing two things there. It's like just confusing. Like,
I think we should normalize getting two witnesses, going to the nearest registry office near you and just getting married. And then you can do the big stuff later. You can do it whenever you want to. And then your relationship, which is kind of the third bit of the triangle, hopefully isn't going to change because you were serious enough to want to get married to each other anyway. So the marriage isn't going to change anything. All it will change is how the law sees you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've touched on so many truths in that. I love it because there's so many people I talk to after they've got married, and you say to them, so how does it feel? What is it different? And they're sort of going, well, it's not different. And that's right, because as you've said, that's the relationship side of things. And actually, you know, if you're with someone who you're really serious about, then getting married or not being married, really, it doesn't make much difference to your day-to-day life. But as you said, the other two sides of that sort of triangle, the social kind of celebratory side, is a separate thing. And it's often a standalone thing that you can kind of experience in whatever way you as a couple want to do it. And then the third piece, which you described so nicely there, is that how does the law treat you, and how does the law then categorize you for some of these, you know, really important things that we often sort of neglect to look at when we get so consumed with the other two parts of that equation. So, yeah, I think it's great that you're sort of sharing that message with as many people as you can. I want to come back to just those inheritance tax points just very briefly as I can, because a couple of other things that you mentioned just before when you were kind of guessing how it works. You mentioned this idea of giving stuff away and sort of continuing to live for 7 years. And that's what in inheritance tax rules is called the seven-year rule. And you're just right. This is the idea that if you give property away, and property in its sort of broader sense there, it doesn't have to be a home, it can be something else of value. But if you give that away to someone and continue to live for a minimum period of 7 years or more after that, then again, nobody pays tax on the value of what you've given away. So that's sort of a gift that you've been able to give without tax. It's also worth mentioning that you actually do have an annual exemption from inheritance tax, and that's £3,000. So if you are thinking about your legacy and who you want to give certain things to, then you can sort of think about it in sort of blocks of £3,000 if that's relevant to what you're trying to give away. And each year you can give up to £3,000 worth of property to someone else, and that again falls within this exemption. You don't pay tax on it. And the final one I wanted to mention, which is a really big one, and it kind of gets weaved into this idea of the threshold, is giving away your home. Because the way the rules work is that if you give your home away to someone other than your spouse, so if you give it away to your spouse, then it's kind of in that general exemption, so your spouse isn't going to pay tax on it. But if you give it away to someone else, then it's classed as part of the value of your estate. But, and this is where, again, family, the construct of a family and how the law treats the construct of a family becomes very important here. Because if you give your home to your children or your grandchildren, then you can bump your threshold from £325,000 to £500,000. So I think people may be aware, there's been some headlines in the papers in the past about this idea of being able to give away £500,000 without paying tax. And that's where we get that number. It's the idea that you can give the up to the value of £325,000 away without paying tax. And if you gift your home to your children or your grandchildren, then it goes up to £500,000. So I didn't know what you think of that.
That's been really good to learn about. The one thing I take away from that is, like, behind every newspaper headline is like like a massive statute or like report, or like you need to do the digging and actually see what's behind that kind of headline grabbing title.
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth digging into these things. It's often the case that the headline maybe is gets people's attention, but it's, when you dig into it, how might that actually apply to you or your family or your friends? It's not always as straightforward as it might first seem. But Timmy, this has been a really interesting conversation for me, and I hope for you as well. But I wonder, just when we reflect on what you've done in terms of your own sort of personal journey around learning about finances and trying to educate yourself and then help others become educated, if you were sort of giving some advice to people listening about, talking about relationships and finances and relationships and tax isn't maybe the most comfortable conversation to have, what would you recommend people do, or how would you recommend they start that conversation?
I think, start with a cheeky Nando's. Me and Jenny were very early on in our relationship. like right now we have a spreadsheet which has all of our finances on it, all of our finances, all of our accounts, all of our debts, all of our assets, all of our liabilities, everything's there. But it actually started out with us putting a Nando's on a card one day when we got sick and tired of paying for things with two cards. And then we moved on from eating out and sharing that expense to moving in and then sharing the bills and then sharing the rent. And it just builds over time. So you don't need to start at like 100. You can literally start at the very bottom where you feel comfortable and just work your way up. I think I'm very lucky to have met Jenny. I'm very lucky to have met someone that I love, that loves me, and that we feel serious enough to go on this journey together. And if that's not you yet, then I really do hope that for you, because it's very rewarding. And if you are in that situation, then just try not to let social conventions or like ideas around what you should and shouldn't do in other people's eyes get in the way of what you want to do in the person you're in a relationship with. That's what I would say.
I love that. So just start small, start where you feel most comfortable and build from there.
Yeah.
That's a really wonderful message to end on, Timmy. Thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope that everyone listening has taken something away from our discussion. I'll leave it there for this week's episode, but you'll hear from us all again soon. Thanks.
Bye, everyone.